wide smile on his face. "Welcome to my home," Batiste said graciously, as if Angel didn't just have a laughing fit. The master waved a hand, gesturing to some plush armchairs nearby. Collins awkwardly pocketed his cuffs, but he apparently realized just who he was standing in front of, if the red crawling up his neck was any indication. The cops were herded to the chairs, Collins and the two uniforms bracketed by the vampiric guards. Collins coughed into his hand, and his eyes bounced around the room, sweat gathering at his temples.
"You are the, master? I'm sorry, I don't know your name, sir."
Batiste glided across the floor, every action less human, too elegant for a mortal to pull off. Feet stayed on the floor, but he may as well have been flying for the resemblance to a human he maintained. Angel found himself transfixed, a mouse in front of a snake, and he gripped Simeon's hip, holding on. His heart jumped and the other humans in the room were just as affected. Batiste gave Angel a single flick of his blue eyes before sitting just as graciously as he walked, and to see the effect Batiste had on humans was startling. They couldn't look away, and Angel was fighting the desire to stare just as hard at Batiste. Simeon's presence at his side grounded him, and he was grateful for it as he watched the humans fall under Batiste's charm. Batiste sat, unbuttoning his suit jacket, leaning back and looking for all the world to be a dignified prince or esteemed CEO. Elegance and power, gilded in luxurious hues. "I am Constantine Batiste, Blood Clan Master of Boston. How may I assist the finest BPD has to offer this evening?" Slick Bastard served them up and had them eating out of his palm. The cops were swept under.
We are here for Salvatore,"
Collins was able to get out, slow blinking. Angel couldn't tell if Batiste was deliberately trying to charm the detective into submission, or if the human just had zero resistance to the sheer power oozing off the ancient undead. "He's right here," Batiste gestured at Angel, who stayed exactly where he was. He didn't trust Collins not to jump him and cuff him, and good luck keeping things from going nuclear then. "Mr. Salvatore, as a consultant for the Blood Clan, has use of our lawyers." Batiste gestured now to the well-dressed vamp standing off to the side. "Is this a matter that requires counsel?"
"A body was stolen from the city morgue last night. A murder victim's body. One that Salvatore identified as one August Remington, former teacher of the high arts here in Boston," Collins said. And with each word he was able to speak more clearly, his control returning, though his eyes were still locked on Batiste. "The coroner, a highly trained wizard in his own right, said it was done by a sorcerer. Magic was used during the theft."
"My condolences on the theft, detective. Body snatchers in Boston. Disturbing. And to Mr. Salvatore as well, as I understand the deceased was a friend of yours." Batiste gave Angel a vague smile, politely cool. Angel nodded, though obviously Batiste knew everything. "And why do you need to speak to Mr. Salvatore?"
"We need to verify his whereabouts. There's some concern necromancy may have been the motivation for the body theft."
Collins now broke away from Batiste's allure and stared hard at Angel.
"And he was the one to identify the body."
"As I understand it, Detective Collins, Boston has the highest concentration of magical practitioners in New England. Some reports even place Massachusetts at the top of the list in terms of natural-born practitioners for the entire country. That means there are thousands of sorcerers in this state. How, then, does this translate to Mr. Salvatore being involved in the theft of a murder victim's body?"
"Like I said, we suspect necromancy. Salvatore is the only necromancer in the city."
"And your proof of necromancy? You do have proof?" Batiste asked, smiling. There was none. Angel knew this. At least he hoped he left no clue behind, though he was certain he hadn't. Collins was quiet, eyes darting between where Angel stood half in Simeon's embrace, and Batiste.
Last night, witnesses placed Salvatore and an unknown man leaving his apartment on foot, heading in the direction of the city morgue. The unknown individual's description fits the man, vampire, standing with Salvatore now.
Yes, he was in the company of Elder Simeon, Batiste said, lip curling up in a charming grin that revealed a hint of fang. The detective gulped. They were on a, what is the word humans use these days? A date. The Blood Clan limo picked them up at the Commons after their walk.
And what time was that? Collins demanded.
Just after sunset, I believe. They then came here.
Angel and Simeon broke in about 2 hours after sunset. They may have seen him leave his place after sunset, but they hadn't managed to follow him to the morgue. Simeon would have sensed the cops stalking them through the city streets. Humans weren't capable of that level of stealth against a vampire. If Batiste maintained their alibi, then the break-in couldn't be pinned on them. Angel held still, face blank, waiting.
Were they here the whole night?
I cannot ascertain that personally. Simeon, my child.
Yes, master, Simeon replied,
the sexy rumble of his voice not just affecting Angel, but Collins as well. The detective gave an infinitesimal shiver. An Angel bit back a grin. Simeon tended to make people want him, no matter their persuasion. Were you and Mr. Salvatore here all night?
Yes, master.
We spent the night in my suite. Simeon sounded smug as fuck and deeply satisfied. An Angel actually blushed at the heat in the elder's words. He leaned in to Simeon, rubbing his hands up the elder's chest and shoulders, relaxing even as he burned with need. Simeon gave him a smile and a kiss, giving their audience an example of their middle-of-the-night activities. So rude to inquire. My apologies, my child. And I had breakfast with the pair this morning just after dawn. Is that sufficient to satisfy your questions? Batiste asked Collins. Detective Collins knew he was getting played. He may be distracted by Batiste and Simeon's sexy undead vibe they both were rocking, but the cop wasn't completely fooled.
I still need to question Salvatore. A body is missing.
And that body is one of a murder victim, who, from descriptions provided by Mr. Salvatore, as he was the man who found the body, was slain by a vampire. Slain as any would be when they are not palatable to our kind. Yet I don't see you inquiring after the whereabouts of my children when this poor man was slain. You come in here asking about his body, when the poor soul is past all caring about what happens to his earthly remains. Why are you not asking me to provide proof of my whereabouts when August Remington was killed, or any of my children, for that matter?
No need, Batiste said, standing abruptly, making the humans jerk in alarm.
There is no need for you to ask where the members of my blood clan were the other day during the murder, as they were all here and accounted for.
Batiste wasn't done.
The portfolio which he'd had all morning suddenly landed in Collins's lap, the detective reflexively grabbing at it to keep it from spilling. Batiste stood over Collins, predatory and cold. In that file are six murders, committed by a rogue vampire, one that the BPD has done nothing to find. All mentions of the killings have been kept from the press. Family members would be up in arms if not for threats from the BPD to remain quiet about the killings. In the last 2 weeks, six people are dead, and just as many are missing from the deceased individual's families. The victims were fed upon, killed, and then a family member was taken from the murder sites. Those taken were all young, healthy, and without heavy emotional entanglements such as spouses or lovers. Collins gaped. Angel was shocked. Angel kindled in his heart. Indignation, disbelief, righteous fury. He felt it all. There was a rogue, most likely Deimos, Since the odds of two vampires going about killing people in one city ruled by as omnipotent a leader as Batiste made that scenario unlikely. And the cops were literally doing nothing. Nothing at all to stop it. The corruption in the room was enough to make Angel sick to his stomach. There is a rogue in Boston. A rogue that is sire in fledglings. Angel growled out, taking a step from Simeon's side. He was so enraged, he was shaking. That's the behavior of a rogue vampire sire in new baby vamps. Gorge themselves just before they sire a new vamp. That's why there are people missing from each murder scene. There is a rogue vamp in this city and you aren't trying to stop it? Simeon grabbed him about the shoulders, holding him back. Batiste nodded, looming still over the cops. There is indeed a rogue in this city. He or she may be siring newborns, and they will have no control. They will kill indiscriminately once they rise. More humans will be killed. I will not have my city descend into madness, turning the populace against my blood clan, which is what will happen. Collins sputtered, but nothing came out. Batiste reached down and yanked the detective to his feet, making him clutch the portfolio. Batiste leaned in and spoke quietly in Collins' ear, though Angel could hear him clearly. You come here on a literal witch hunt. You come from my necromancer and do so contrary to your sworn duty. No proof, but hatred fueled by old prejudices that should have died in the wars. Someone is trying to kill Angelus, yet you seek to throw him behind bars where he would surely die. Batiste stalked Collins back towards the door, driving the cops ahead of him. A rogue hunts the streets of Boston, killing and turning innocents by force. The police do nothing, and those who would do something are silenced. If the police do not act, I will. Under my authority as master of this city, I have hired Mr. Salvatore to find the rogue and bring him to justice, whether by blade, sorcery, or death at my hands. Any attempt to stop him will be treated as an act of aggression on the part of the BPD. Batiste paused and gave Collins such a feral smile that the detective paled whiter than a corpse. The mayor is attending my gala tonight, and I will be discussing the matter with him. So it is in your best interests to get to work. Batiste, with the guards at his side, all but chased the police from the room, the doors closing. Get out and resume your sworn duties. The door shut.
Chapter 10. Unexpected Festivities.
I'm your what again? Angel asked, sitting on Simeon's bed, watching as the vampire removed his shirt, fingers flying over the buttons. Pants quickly joined the shirt on the floor, and Simeon prowled towards the bed.
Lenon, Simeon purred, and Angel grinned.
Simeon stopped on the edge of the bed, eyeing Angel, lust and need and a depth of emotion that made his heart race.
Love, soulmate, beloved.
And what does a Lenon do exactly? Angel towed off his socks, hands going to his waistband as he stripped himself quickly, clothes ending up back on the floor twice in less than 12 hours. They had nowhere to be for the rest of the day. Most of the Blood Clan slept during the day, despite the treated windows, and the first thing Angel wanted to see Bridgerton and his entourage. But they slumbered, and even Angel was cautious of waking sleeping undead. There was some sort of gala tonight. Why they couldn't just call it a party was beyond Angel. And that would be his best chance to see the new vampires in town.
A vampire's lover in general. Or my Lanon in particular, aura?
Simeon asked, whispering as he climbed the bed, catching Angel by the ankle and holding him still.
Yours. What does your lover do?
Angel gasped when Simeon bent down and kissed the arch of his foot, nipping, making his leg jerk in Simeon's strong grasp. Angel moaned when Simeon repeated the process, but on his ankle.
then the back of his lower leg. My lover, my soulmate, if he would be my mate, would let me treasure him, Simon whispered, and his eyes began to glow, emerald green flames that burned as embers in a banked fire. My Lanon would let me cherish every moment he gifted me, every smile, every taste of his lips. Simeon crept up the bed, spreading Angel's legs, encouraging him to wrap them around his lean waist. Angel pulled him closer, their hard cocks, one cool, the other burning with heat, sliding over each other, making them both groan. Simeon lowered himself atop Angel, who opened his mouth in welcome when a questioning tongue tasted his lips. Angel undulated his hips, causing a rapidly heating, rock-hard cock to slip between his ass cheeks and glide over his hole. Simeon growled and took the kiss deeper, feeding the rising passion between them. No thoughts left for words now, just them and the need to connect, to be as close as they possibly could be. Angel rolled his hips again and again, and Simeon shuddered with need, growls reverberating through his torso while Angel kept up the torture. He wanted, needed, had to have Simeon inside of him, and this fire burning between them was too new for it to be tempered by patience. Angel bit Simeon's lower lip, making Simeon jerk in his arms, and Simeon reared up, kneeling on the bed, fangs lowered completely and eyes wild and glowing. Hands gripped his knees, opening his legs, holding him still. Simeon bared his fangs, cock standing proud and flushed, leaking a clear line of fluid from the tip that dripped down the inside of Angel's thighs. Simeon reached out and took Angel in hand, stroking him, ownership in every flick of his wrist. Angel gasped and lifted his hips, arching into the hand that worked him without mercy. Simeon's other hand slid down the back of his leg, fingers seeking out his ass, slipping between the cheeks and going straight for his hole, blunt fingertips rubbing over the puckered flesh. Angel stilled, eyes wide, mouth open, lungs unable to work as Simeon did it again, stroking his cock in time to the slow, steady, and very proprietary touch over his hole. Simeon chuckled, a cruel sound that made Angel shiver. Angel reached out frantic to pull Simeon down on top of him, in him, to get Simeon to hold him down and fuck him senseless. Simeon dodged his desperate hands and leaned over, hand searching in the blankets. Angel heaved a fast breath in relief when Simeon's hand came up with a bottle of lube. Please, Angel gasped out, arching his hips, reaching for his own cock, desperate for a tight grip on his aching flesh. Make me feel like I'm yours. Hold me down. I need to feel it. He was losing his mind. He had to be. He'd never begged in his life. Simeon must have seen something in his expression, or heard it in his voice that spoke to the depth of his need. Since he was soon covered by hard muscles and long limbs, Simeon's weight pushing him down, legs wider. He locked them about his lover's lean waist, hooking his heels and lifting his hips. There was no finesse, no cautious and careful preparation. In the barest of thought, Simeon was inside of him, stealing his breath and will. Hot and cold collided, and he shook, overwhelmed. Simeon captured his mouth in a kiss that was all tongue and harsh lips, his hips rocking. Angel cried out, reduced to wordless sobs. Simeon moved, each thrust inside ruthless and deep, ever so fucking deep, leaving Angel no place to escape in his mind as Simeon systematically reduced him to aching, whimpering passion. Hands scored Simeon's shoulders, Angel searching for a lifeline. But he had no moment to catch his breath, no second to gather himself and do more than feel. Simeon took him over, wholly and totally, left no part of his body untouched by his masterful hands and obliterating rhythm of his hips. The thick cock spearing him, impaling him and holding him down, moved relentlessly. An Angel cried out with each thrust and withdrawal. He felt stretched thin, ready to snap and burst into 1,000 pieces of raw pleasure and sweet aches.
So tight around me,
Simeon whispered in his ear, his big hands now wrapped under Angel's shoulders, holding him in place as he increased the pace of their fucking.
Hot and tight. You fit me perfectly. So perfect, my Lenon.
Every shiver, every tingle and buzz along his nervous system began to coalesce, to slowly pull from his extremities and gather in his center, rumbling down his spine to settle heavy and expectant in his groin. Angel whined, and he bit the hard, wide shoulder above him when he came with a deep shudder. His body clamped down on Simeon, who thrust harder, shoving them both across the bed, sheets tearing beneath clawed fingers. Angel tasted the tang of mint and chocolate and cool, sweet spices across his tongue, and Simeon lifted his head, screaming out his release, cordons in his neck standing out in relief and fangs bared. Angel came again, and his head fell back, exposing his own neck, Simeon's blood running from his lips. He could feel Simeon shuddering atop him, the strange and welcome coolness in his depth signaling his lover's release, making him gasp with each heavy pulse into his core. Simeon's cry still echoed about the room, pinging in his ears, the last thing Angel heard before darkness swept over his eyes, and a sudden and unexpected wave of pleasure chased him into oblivion. He rarely slept after sex. In fact, he could honestly say he had no idea when the last time was that he passed out after having an orgasm, though the first time with Simeon made him do the same. Whether it was having sex with a vampire, or having sex with Simeon that made him pass out, he had no idea, though he had a feeling it was more about the man than the supernatural creature. Angel sat up, the covers falling from his chest. A swipe of his tongue across his lower lip confirmed his blurry memory of biting Simeon so hard the vamp bled. The surface of his tongue bloomed with a chocolate sweetness, a cool hint of mint chasing the taste down his throat. Angel blew out a shaky breath and looked at the clock beside the bed. But for the blood still on his lips, he was clean, no lube or spunk in sight. It was just after sunset, though he couldn't see out the windows. They were all obscured by thick red curtains, and a single light from across the room let him see he was alone. "I'd like to wake up next to him just once," Angel muttered as he slid from the bed, grabbing the sheet as he went, wrapping it around his hips and gathering the excess around his arm like a badly done toga. The door opened and Angel stopped, as startled as the human in the doorway.
What the fuck?
Angel said, annoyed someone would just waltz into a bedroom without knocking. There was no reason for bad fucking manners, and the excuse he could see hovering on parted, pouty lips on the presumed blood donor wasn't going to stand up under his doubt.
Ever heard of knocking?
The human man stepped over the threshold, bowing in the half-light from the single lamp. Angel saw shiny, pale silver marks along the sides of his neck, and it clicked for him what, not who, this person was. Blood servant. The man's words next confirmed it. Elder Simeon is attending to the master, but bid me come assist you. Your clothes have been laundered, though Elder Simeon has sent new apparel from the clan tailor for you to wear tonight at the gala.
He did what? I'm going to the potty thing? Oh, wait. Fuck. What the hell is going on?
Angel gaped. This wasn't some rags-to-riches bullshit movie trope. He had his own clothes, and no one was dressing him.
Why does no one call it a damn potty like normal people, and why can't I wear my own clothes?
It's a formal black tie event, sir. Elder Simeon left you a note, I believe. The blood servant didn't seem at all fazed by Angel's bad mood, though not surprising as he made a living from feeding vampires from his jugular. Not much rattled people crazy enough to do that on a daily basis. Angel glared, but went looking for a note. He found it on Simeon's pillow, the handwriting elegant and reminiscent of ages past. Bridgerton'll be at dinner tonight before the midnight gala welcoming him to the clan.
The gala will be the only opportunity to meet all the new additions before Bridgerton moves to his new accommodations. His people will be there. This is our best chance to see if Bridgerton or his people are Deimos. I guess I'm going to a party, Angel groused, looking down at the shirt around his waist. Angel sighed and gave the blood servant a tight smile. Where's my new clothes at? The servant bowed again, saying, I shall fetch them immediately, sir. Dinner is in less than an hour. The blood servant left, and Angel crumpled the note, summoning a burst of hellfire and burning it to ash in his hand. If he had his way, the vampire known as Deimos would be ash himself soon. All Angel needed to do was find him. He let the faint breeze from the central heating system blow the remnants away, and he headed for the bathroom, dropping the sheet as he went. The last time he was in clothing this fancy, he was burying his whole family. Angel fussed with a black silk tie, not enjoying the stranglehold it had on his neck. The black tuxedo and pristine snow-white shirt and black trousers were so finely tailored he was afraid to breathe and rip some seams. Shaven, dressed to kill, and hungry, Angel waited impatiently for his date to arrive, feeling foolish and excited all at once. Here he was, planning on attending a damn ball in order to identify and kill a murderer, and he was nervous about Simeon's reaction to how he looked. There was no point in thinking he would bother catching Deimos and handing him over to either the police or the master. The police were clearly not to be trusted, and the master may find his hand stacked by the identity of the killer, depending on who Deimos turned out to be. There was no doubt in Angel that Deimos was here, now in the tower. Too many changes in the last week that were all connected and true coincidences that weren't all that common, especially not in his world. The door opened and Angel forgot how to breathe. Simeon walked in and took his hand, staring down at him with an affectionate smile on his lush lips, and his green eyes were lit up, shown off to advantage by the rich hues of his smoky gray tuxedo and jewel-toned tie. His auburn hair was swept back in a high, smooth wave that showed off his high cheekbones, and even complimented the woad-colored tattoo peeking over the back of his collar on his muscular neck. The diamond tie pin glimmered, and the single gold ring on Simeon's third finger glowed with a deep, large emerald. Angel meshed his fingers with Simeon's, and they stared at each other in awe. Simeon hummed his approval, leaning down and gently biting Angel's jaw before kissing away the slight sting, moving his lips around to Angel's mouth and kissing him softly. Angel moaned, head tipped back, and arched into Simeon's arms, rubbing his front all along the vampire's, needing more contact. Can we just stay here? Let's do that, Angel breathed out as Simeon rumbled out a laugh and hugged him tightly. You can sniff out a killer from here, yeah? I shall be sending them all out discreetly tonight, my love. No fear on that. If I can scent the killer, I'll immediately tell you. Though we have a place to be, Lenon, I wish I could remain here and show you just how much I adore how handsome you are in that tuxedo. Simeon kissed him again, a firm press of lips that made his hurt. But Angel wanted another. He liked hard, firm kisses, and Simeon knew it. Come, my love, we have people to impress, and hopefully someone to kill. Gives a new meaning to the expression dressed to kill, Angel laughed out, accepting Simeon's arm as his lover led them out into the hall. I believe that was the original meaning, Agra, Simeon replied, chuckling. Shush, don't ruin this for me, Angel chided, and surprised himself by blushing when Simeon brought their joined hands up and kissed the back of Angel's knuckles. The ride down in the elevator was odd, as there were double the guards present, cramping the space. The guards wore tuxes too, both vampires and humans on duty. The only way to distinguish between the two species was that while they were all huge, only the vampires moved with an innate grace that no human could pull off. Armed and intimidating, Angel gave the guards he encountered a cheeky grin, making them alternatively flinch, glare, or ignore him. The elevator dropped them off on the ground floor of the tower. The casino was on this floor, along with several conference rooms, private rooms for a myriad of purposes, and a large, grand ballroom, replete with a stage for live music, a DJ booth, balconies along the walls, and open bars on each wall. Tables ran along the outside of the dance floor, and Simeon led him through the milling throng of humans and supernats. Angel recognized local celebrities from the news and papers, some football players, the mayor of Boston, and even a few senators. Wealth dripped from the crowd in copious waves of gems and silk, luxurious fabrics and designer clothing. Waiters prowled around the room, serving flutes of champagne and crystal glasses of hard liquor. The ceiling above was lit up by three large chandeliers, blazing like miniature suns. The vampires were easy to pick from the crowd, as were the other supernats present. Angel was surprised to see several fae, the reclusive species rarely seen in metropolitan areas, but he saw at least three of them mingling in the crowd. The slightly pointed ears and the inhuman beauty were dead giveaways, as were the forest hues to their clothing. Werewolves, the hirsute behemoths along the walls, the least likely of wallflowers congregated together, and everyone else gave them a wide berth. They were safe. It wasn't a full moon for another week, so no one was going to rage out. Lesser-known supernats moved through the crowd, and Angel couldn't resist double glances at some of the more surprising guests. What got to Angel the most was the way Simeon moved through the milling crowd. The elder moved as if there was no one else present, as if they were alone in the path clear before them. Total ownership of his space and purpose drew countless eyes to them as they walked across the grand room. As they approached, vampires bowed and backed away, murmuring greetings to their elder. Humans looked nervous or even frightened, all of them moving out of the way as well. Angel could see which were blood servants and which were guests, the bite scars and fresh scores on necks making the distinction obvious. Simeon took them to the top of the room, where a long dark oak table with seating for at least 20 people stood, covered in candles and silver platters. Simeon took Angel straight to the head of the table, where Batiste stood, surrounded by a well-dressed crowd of vampires and humans, each vying for his attention. They parted before Simeon and Angel. An Angel soon found himself across from a tall, swarthy vampire, whose natural skin tone resisted even the pallor of his vampiric nature. Dark long hair tied back in a braid, with a short, neatly trimmed full beard. The other vampire looked to Angel as he imagined a pirate would look back in the 1600s. There was even a jeweled earring in the vamp's left ear, a tiny skull carved from a blue gem that dangled from the scarred lobe. Necromancer Salvatore, may I present William Bridgerton, lately of Atlanta, our newest clan member. Batiste took Angel's free hand, holding it in both of his larger, colder hands, and giving him a small dip of his head before turning to Bridgerton. William, it is an honor to present to you Angela Salvatore, Boston's singular necromancer, and the Lanon, to my esteemed child, Elder Simeon. I believe you met Simeon the other night at dinner, yes? Bridgerton's eyes were locked on Angel. His full lips twisted into a mocking grin, more aggression than welcome in his eyes. Bridgerton gave Angel a brief nod of acknowledgement, then his eyes went to Simeon. We met, yes, very briefly before your elder appeared to get important news and left us in a hurry. Can I assume it was about your beloved accepting your courtship? As I could swear, no one mentioned that Angela Salvatore was bonded to a member of this clan. I am standing right here, Angel quipped, and gave a small zip of power to the hand in Batiste's grip, making the master let go. Angel gave Bridgerton a narrow glare, all but daring the old vamp to say anything else. My personal relationship is none of your business. Shocked hissing and nervous shifting from the crowd around them told Angel he was treading on dangerous ground. But he wasn't worried. He wanted to know if any one of the numerous vamps standing at Bridgerton's back was Deimos. And as Simeon hadn't reacted at all to Bridgerton, then that meant Bridgerton wasn't their vamp. "Angel has recently accepted my cardship," Simeon replied. His hand gripped Angel's harder for a brief second before relaxing. "I must offer my congratulations, then," Bridgerton said. Bridgerton grabbed a drink from a passing servant holding up the glass of what looked to be a carbonated cranberry juice until Angel's nose twitched. Designer blood drink. Everyone who had a drink briefly toasted them. An Angel glowered at Bridgerton, ignoring the murmured compliments tossed in their direction.
"It's a shame you left when you did, Elder Simeon. I was about to declare my intention to challenge for a position as elder of this clan when you left so early. But since you're here now..." Bridgerton smiled, predatory and grim, turning to Batiste and bowing. "I will be challenging for a position as elder, Master Batiste."
"I had a feeling you would be. Though you are aware I will not be opening a new position if you go through with your challenge. You will have to fight and defeat either Etienne or Simeon for the honor of being an elder,"
Batiste replied, appearing bored, though Angel was fighting back the urge to hex Bridgerton where he stood and burn him to a crisp. He wanted to be an elder, and somehow Angel didn't think the contest was to first blood. From the way Etienne shifted nervously, and how Simeon gave Bridgerton a single brow lift and hugged Angel to his side, it was obvious which vampire was not going to be challenged. Etienne glared at Bridgerton, who completely ignored him, finishing his drink.
"I would wish you luck, but I cannot. I would suggest you rethink your intentions, since you cannot properly ascertain the dangers you're taking on with such a task as an elder challenge," Simeon cautioned. "Neither Etienne or I are lacking in skills."
Bridgerton chuckled and sent a lazy glance over Etienne, the elder hissing back. Batiste interrupted the deeply intense moment by moving towards the table. Everyone seemed to take their cue from that, people sitting across the room. Dishes clinked and silverware echoed across the space, and Angel found himself sitting between Batiste at the head of the table, Simeon on his right, with Bridgerton directly across from him, Etienne on Bridgerton's other side. How Etienne could sit next to Bridgerton and not lose his shit, Angel had no idea. Vampires in general had to be stone-cold bastards to not show any emotion after casually discussing killing each other. The rest of Bridgerton's entourage was seated at the table, and Angel wished they hadn't sat so soon, since he wanted to talk to some of these people, see if Simeon recognized their sense. Angel looked as carefully as he could at the vamps and humans across the table, but none of the vamps stood out. He couldn't hear them well enough to distinguish voices, not that he was sure he could recall Deimos's voice from the stairwell, as the vamp had been in full-blown bloodlust at the time, fangs warping his voice and mouth. Dark brown eyes, so dark they were nearly black, met his, and the human gave a jerk, his face going blank of all expression before he looked down at his plate and ate. The young man was younger than Isaac, probably 20 or so, and his neatly messy hair was dirty blonde and thick. Angel kept watching, and the young man dared a glimpse up at him, saw him watching and startled again, this time knocking his glass over. Water spilled on the table and the young man awkwardly mopped it up with a linen napkin. "I don't know anyone," Angel said aloud, looking away from the awkward young man, suspicion fussing at the back of his mind. He knew that boy. Somewhere, somehow, he knew that boy at the other end of the table. Angel jabbed at Simeon with his elbow, and Simeon gave him a raised brow, confused. "Introduce me to some more people," Angel said, and nodded his chin at the boy, who was now staring back at Angel, face paling, eyes wide.
"Of course, Agra, though I do not know everyone here.
Some of our guests belong to Bridgerton, Simeon said casually, and he directed his next comment across the table. Mr. Bridgerton, would you do the honors of introducing us to your friends?
Certainly, Bridgerton replied with a smile that told Angel he was anything but pleased.
My companions, he said, pointing to two vampires on the other side of Etienne, who nodded as they were named. Alora Suma, a dark nymph-like woman who looked like she was 15, but acted far older, and Douglas Eshet, an older vampire who was reborn undead in his 50s, both who have been members of my household for the last century, and my blood servant, Rachel Evans.
Who's the boy? Angel asked, and Etienne bristled, but Baptiste answered.
That young man is Etienne's newest toy. Daniel, I believe, is his name.
Time stopped, made a funny hiccup that stole the air from his lungs and sent his skin aflame in awareness.
Angel slowly turned his head, the conversations around them falling into the background, his mind taken up in a refrain of horrified recognition.
Daniel. He did indeed know the boy at the table. And the young man knew him, too.
McAvoy. Daniel McAvoy. Son of Leicester McAvoy. Only 10 years old when his whole family conspired and committed the mass murder of the Salvatore clan.
Simeon growled beside him, sensing his alarm. But Angel was too busy staring at Daniel. The young man at the end of the table stared back, so pale he was likely in danger of passing out. An Angel saw in him the rude, abrasive young man at his door months ago, demanding to know how Angel killed 100 vampires in a single night, alone and without help. Angel had sent him away, not even bothering to learn his name, or why he so earnestly wanted to know how to kill vampires en masse.
Daniel swallowed, and got up, rattling the chair and table and mumbling apologies to the people seated next to him. He wasted no time taking off like a shot between the tables. Angel pushed back from his chair, dodging Simeon's hand, and ignoring the voices calling after him, demanding answers. Angel followed Daniel, tracking the young man as he wove through the crowd.
Daniel! Stop, damn it!
Angel called, pissed off. He just wanted to talk. He didn't even know Daniel was still in Boston. And how the hell was he a blood servant? He was the son of two powerful sorcerers. Daniel's blood was pure poison to any undead.
Daniel! Stay away! He said you wouldn't recognize me. I'm sorry, he made me do it.
Daniel cried over his shoulder, running between two tables for a side hall. Guards saw them coming and people were yelling behind them.
Leave me alone! Daniel McAvoy, get back here, damn it!
Angel yelled, sprinting hard. The guards at the door made to grab Daniel, but he backpedaled away and rammed right into Angel. Angel caught him about the waist and tried his best to hold the boy still. But Daniel was taller than him and weighed more. Daniel broke free and swung wildly at Angel. He ducked and held his hands up.
Daniel, stop! God damn it!
Is it Damus? Is Bridgerton Damus?
What? No!
Daniel was panting, sweating, eyes darting around the room as both vamps and guards circled them, guests rudely kicked out of their seats. Simeon was approaching, Baptiste, Bridgerton, and Etienne close on his heels, forcing their way through the crowd.
Stay away from me!
A thump. A powerful tide of energy echoed between the space between Daniel and Angel. Angel knew what it was, and from the gasps in the room he wasn't the only practitioner in the space to feel Daniel tap into the veil. Blue energy crackled around Daniel's shoulders, his aura flaring, becoming visible as he fed raw veil power into his core.
Daniel, I just want to talk to you! Stop it!
He got his own shields up just in time. A ball of blue fire roared across the space between them, crackling as it fell in spurts of flame to the floor, his shield breaking it apart.
Get out of the way!
Screams and shouts came from the guests as Daniel threw spell after spell at Angel, the boy clearly panicked and terrified. Eyes wild and hands shaking, Daniel screamed at him in bad Latin, his lack of training making him even more dangerous. A haphazard curse came screaming at him, and Angel caught it, his shields absorbing it before it could ricochet off their surface and hit someone in the crowd.
"Get out of here!"
Angel screamed at the confused onlookers, getting Simeon's attention and pointing at the people standing around, watching.
"He has no idea what he's doing. Get him out of here or someone's gonna die. Move it!"
Simeon nodded and began yelling orders, and Angel kept his hands up, pushing out with his shields, covering the fleeing crowds behind him as Daniel tossed spell after spell at him. The boy was barely holding on to the veil, power surging in badly maintained waves that swelled and fell in near chaos. Their impromptu duel was nothing but raw power and instinct. Fires broke out across the room, along the walls and on the ceiling, tables melting and glass breaking. Daniel was casting with everything he had, draining himself and leaving his control over the veil disintegrating. Angel kept his shields up and made them less reflective, stickier. Spells came at him, landing with sharp whines and hissing, the air thick with ozone and heat, and his focus fell to the boy in front of him. Daniel was sweating through his suit, and the boy fell to his knees as Angel pushed out, ready to pull a fucking risky-as-hell maneuver. All he had to do was get close enough and he could turn his shields inside out and drop them over Daniel, trapping him inside, under Angel's control, and the boy would likely knock himself out with his own spells. It was like flipping a teacup over on top of a spider, and he had to do it quickly enough not to get bit. He was only a handful of feet from Daniel when the boy stopped, a hand on the floor holding himself up. And he seemed to understand that everything he was trying to do wasn't even getting through Angel's shields. Angel had him outclassed. He hadn't even needed to draw on the veil to protect himself from Daniel. The boy may be a sorcerer, but his training was woefully lacking. And Daniel was coming to realize that. The boy gave a frustrated scream, and Angel saw a ring of vampires approaching, encircling the boy, fangs bared and claws out. Something was driving the boy, instigating his fear to such heights that his first reaction to being recognized by Angel was to attack, even in a room of innocence. Daniel was terrified, but the question was who scared him the most, Angel or Deimos? "Daniel, please listen to me. I am not your enemy. I will not harm you. Please, please, stand down," Angel pleaded, even as he twisted his wrists, prepping his shields for the flip. There was no way Daniel would recognize the motion, not with his training as bad as it was.
"You are a Salvator! You hate us all! You want me dead!"
Daniel cried out, tears joining the sweat on his face.
"He said you would kill me if you knew I was here!"
"Who said, Daniel? Who are you so frightened of?"
Angel asked, crouching on his heels, hands still up, palms out, ready to flip his shield if he must. He could pour his will inside and break Daniel's as he would an out-of-control student lost in the veil and knock the boy out. He made his voice softer, kinder. "Daniel, I am not your enemy. You were a little kid back then, and I have never blamed you for anything. Let me help you." The vampires were coming closer. Simeon, Baptiste, and Etienne directly behind the exhausted sorcerer. Angel met their gazes and gave an infinitesimal shake to his head, asking them to stop. They all did, Baptiste holding up a hand to get the other vampires approaching to halt as well. Etienne was the last to stop, crouching about 10 feet from Daniel, ready to pounce. Angel met Daniel's eyes, trying his best to convey his honesty. "Daniel? I will not hurt you. I promise." It made his chest hurt, actually hurt to see the hope in Daniel's dark eyes. The boy was ready to collapse, and Angel pressed just a bit more. "Daniel, who is Deimos? Is he the one you're afraid of?" Daniel bit his lip, but nodded. An Angel cheered inwardly in victory. "I can keep you safe from him. Who is he, Daniel? Is he here right now?"
"Yes,"
Daniel answered, falling forward, whispering. Angel could feel him trying to let go of the veil, the ambient power in the room spiking as Daniel fumbled his control.
"Easy, Daniel," Angel cautioned.
"Let me help you let go of the veil. You know I can do that for you. Yeah? Then you can tell me who Deimos is, and this'll all be over. Okay?"
"Okay,"
Daniel breathed, the boy ready to pass out. Angel dropped his shields completely, lunging forward as Daniel collapsed before catching himself, forcing himself back up on his knees. The vampires hissed in concert, creepy and disturbing. Etienne inched closer. An angel glared at the elder, warning him to back off. Angel was 2 feet from the boy when Etienne lunged, screeching. Angel was knocked away, falling on his ass as Etienne landed on top of Daniel, jaws wide as he bit the boy on the neck. Daniel screamed, blood running over his lips, the sound strangled. He clawed ineffectively at Etienne's back, trying to get free as the vampire ravaged his neck. No! Angel screamed, and blasted Etienne in the back with a green ball of fire, making the vampire rip away, throwing Daniel to the floor. A small, dark gray jar bound in black twine fell from Daniel's jacket and bounced a few feet away, clattering on the hardwood floor. Etienne roared in triumph when he saw it, and leapt, smashing the jar with his hand. Fuck! Angel threw another ball of fire, but it was too late. Etienne blurred away, and the other vampires converged. Angel lifted Daniel in his arms, and with a burst of kinetic energy, pushed the vampires all away from him and Daniel. He kept his eye on the broken jar, the black smoke emanating from the fractured pieces setting fire to the floor in a set pattern as the spell released itself. Daniel's blood, running from his neck and out across the floor, met a trail of smoke, and the spell flared to life, a circle combusting around the remnants of the jar, and a void of black puddled and swirled in the center. Angel put a hand over Daniel's neck, the boy unconscious already, trying to stem the flow of blood from his injury. Daniel had released the veil the second he lost consciousness, his mind open to Angel. Angel reached for the veil this time and raised his shields around him and the boy dying in his arms. The spell unspinning itself in front of him was more dangerous than anything the boy had cast before. And now Angel knew who summoned the demon that attacked him. Angel! Simeon called to him, trying to get to him through his shield, bashing at it with his hands, light flaring out and crashing from the points of contact. My love, take the shield down! Simeon, get back! Trust me and get back! Simeon cried out, unwilling, Batiste grabbing him and yanking him away. A horrible roar of sound, and an intense and fiery burst of light crawled from the depths of the black void. A many-clawed hand snapped through the abyss, lodging on the wooden floor, and the demon on the other side of the void pulled itself through in response to the set summoning spell that had been trapped in the jar. Dark gray and green scales, splashed with random yellow spots, adorned the beast, and it straddled the void, its tail slipping free just as the portal closed with a horrifying snap. It roared, raising to an impressive 10-foot height, its many tongues flailing over hundreds of teeth. The demon's voice, frighteningly familiar.
Angelus!
Angel! Simeon screamed, the terror in his voice breaking Angel's heart and threatening to destroy his focus. Batiste kept his hold on Simeon, who screamed in defiance and tried to break free. He could handle this. He had to. Or the boy would die, and the demon would kill Angel. Angel sent his will down, into the boy who was dying. Daniel McAvoy was hovering on the brink of death, and that was where Angel was strongest. He could not heal scratches or bruises or broken bones, but a mortal wound, a killing blow, that Angel had dominion over, and he used his affinity now. He could not bring someone back from death, at least not as they were in life, but as a revenant, like August, or a zombie, or Wraith, but a soul on the edge between life and death and not fully departed. Angel could and would pull them back. The death magic answered him. An angel sealed the torn arteries, fused the sundered flesh, poured veil-drawn energy into the failing body in his arms, and he called Daniel's soul back from the brink. And while his spirit and Daniel's communed, the transfer of power total and complete, Angel saw into the boy's mind and heart and knew the truth. Angel lifted his head and his hand came up, covered in Daniel's blood, wet and sticky and full of power. The demon scored the floor, its long tail smashing tables and chairs, tossing aside the foolish vampires attacking it like raptors would a T-Rex in those sci-fi movies Isaac loved so much. Ichor dripped from its red mouth. An angel saw the scars along its snout from their first encounter. Simeon yelled at the vampires, their bodies broken and slashed, but they backed away, waiting on Angel. Angel kept his hand up and spread his fingers, sending out his will. As he healed Daniel, he stole from the boy the original name of the beast before him, summoning unwilling across dimensional voids to kill for his master. Angel gently lay Daniel down, the boy still wounded and drained, though he would live if Angel got him to a doctor. Angel stood and stepped over Daniel. He took one step, then another, focusing his will on the beast, and it backed away, lowering to all fours like a cat, its form changing and twisting, torn apart by the energies that held it here in Angel's world, away from its home. The gas upon the beast was what drove it to its violence and madness. Angel would end its suffering. "Arok, child of the void," Angel intoned, stepping forward, measured steps and calm, even breaths focusing his will. "Arok, hear me and obey."
"Angelus,"
it hissed, a thousand voices tumbling over themselves to form his name. And its eyes narrowed, flaring yellow. Spittle dripped from its fangs, and Angel could feel the beast push back against his command through the tenuous connection between them.
"You must die, Angel of Death."
Its voice was weakening, its will eroding, but not fast enough. If Angel couldn't tame the demon, the gas would overwhelm the beast and send it after Angel, and anyone in its way. "Arok, stolen child, enslaved soul of the void, hear me and obey."
"No!"
It screamed, neck twisting, lowering down on the floor, and Angel dropped his shield, needing no interference between the demon and himself. It was such a risk to take, his heart thundered in fear. But he must win. He must make it answer to its name. Simeon yelled at him. An Angel was thankful Batiste was the stronger of the two, keeping Simeon from harm.
"You will answer me,"
Angel screamed, throat hurting as he pulled more of the veil into himself and set it crashing along the weak link to the beast. It screamed in turn, collapsing to the floor and submitting at last. Silence fell. An Angel rushed forward, the deafening quiet muffling everything, even his own breaths. Angel kept his hand up and his will on the beast. An Angel scuffed the circle on the floor, kicking apart the broken pieces of the jar that had held the complete summoning spell. It was an impressive yet foolhardy example of spellcasting, a masterpiece composed by a fool who did not know any better. It may have been Daniel. It may not. But Angel now had the beast under his control and did not need the haphazard summoning circle to stop it. He could not send it back, not with the gas attached to it still. And from the memories he'd seen in Daniel's mind, the boy had not placed the gas. It did not take magic to do so, as all a sorcerer had to do was summon a demon, any demon, and allow anyone present to give the beast its first command, the gas. Once done, the gas would remain in place until the demon was killed, which was almost impossible. Where the one who gave it the gas was dead or willingly absolved the demon from its task. What Angel could do was change the shape of the gas. The task for this beast was to kill Angel. He was the focus, the lodestone of the demon's task. All he had to do was change the task and keep the focus on him. "Arok, child of the void, hear me and be at peace. Peace, child of the abyss. I lift from you the pain, the torture. Be thyself free from bonds of violence. Hear me and become as you should be," Angel whispered, standing over the beast, its size huge and dwarfing him. It gave a keen, a hollow wail of pain and shuddered. It shrank. Gray scales shimmered, turned a deep emerald green, a wave of verdant light flowing over its hide as it became smaller. Limbs shrieking, the dreadful beast softening, the pain leaving its body as it twitched and chirped. From murderer to devoted companion. Angel was still the focus of the demon's task, but the task was new. Angel knelt, and with a slow, careful breath, picked up the small dragon, its yellow eyes blinking slowly, so tired and exhausted, without the gas on it demanding it commit murder contrary to its innate nature. Angel's control over it granted the beast its free will. The demon resumed the wild shape it held in its home dimension. The tiny dragon was the size of a house cat, emerald and scaled, with four legs and two small, perfect wings upon its shoulders, a tail twice as long as its body, and winding around Angel's arm. It chirped, frightened, confused. An angel sighed, exhausted himself as he got to his feet. Angel was still the focus of the demon's task, but the task was new. Angel soothed Eruk, the tiny dragon so confused and lost, and he felt horrible himself. He was still its master, and the dragon may now be itself, but it was still just as trapped. "Forgive me, Eruk, child of the wild skies," he whispered, and the tiny head lifted to look him in the face, and it nodded, curling into him, eyes closing. He would give it peace and protection until he could kill their mutual enemy. He held Eruk gently and turned to the rest of the room. Shock was the least of expressions sent his way. Dumbfounded and frightened were the most prevalent, the vampires and the few brave remaining souls in the room all staring at him. All but one, at least. Simeon shook off Batiste, the master just as shocked as the rest of the room. An angel smiled as his lover approached. Simeon stepped over the debris and the scorched floor and took Angel in his arms, sleepy dragon and all. "You are a marvel," Simeon whispered in his ear, clutching him close. "I love you too," Angel